Welcome to the Joy of Healthcare podcast, where we discuss how you can make a profit and put people at the center of everything you do. Today, we have Paul Ramsey on the podcast. Paul is the executive director of A Little Help, a nonprofit senior assistant agency based in Denver. The company has mastered something known as the Village concept, which is gaining traction with seniors all over the country. In this episode, Paul and Jesse talk about what help and growing older means to the greatest generation. He also lets us in on his secret of keeping both liberals and conservatives supporting his cause, and how you and your family can pump some passion and purpose into your weekends. Thanks, and hope you enjoy the episode.
Today I'm here with Paul Ramsey. Paul Ramsey is a Denver native. He's an active minister, and he's the executive director for a nonprofit called A Little Help. What A Little Help does is they connect neighbors to help seniors thrive in their communities. So thank you so much for joining me, Paul.
Thank you. It's glad to be here.
Yeah. Why don't we just start off with an overview of what does A Little Help do, and how did you come up with that name?
Well, the name, we started as an organization called Washington Park Cares. We started 10 years ago in the Washington Park area, in the three or four neighborhoods right around the park, by some octogenarians who had read an article about Beacon Hill Village, which is in Boston. There were a few different national articles, I think one in the New York Times and one in the Wall Street Journal. And when folks read about the simplicity of the model, neighbors thought, you know, we could start something like that in our neighborhood. And so this group of neighbors began to kind of gather in coffee shops and neighborhood association meetings and living rooms and things like that to talk about the idea of neighbors helping neighbors to help seniors stay in their homes. And after 4 or 5 years of doing that and having a 501c3 and really having a fairly informal process with volunteers answering the phone and very limited part-time staff, they decided that in order to grow and be sustainable, they needed to kind of begin to reshape the business model and hire a full-time professional. And that's when I came along. So I'm the first full-time executive director, and I started almost 6 years ago now. And I was the only employee for a little bit of time. And then soon I hired Hillary Lenz, who's become our program director. And we've been able to hire a few other specialized professionals to help meet the needs. Our mission now is connecting neighbors to help seniors thrive. And we came across I started with the help of a friend who's a branding expert in L.A. He gave me what they call a deck, which was what I could use to work with some focus groups. And in the focus groups, I used some of the Washington Park Cares volunteers and senior members and things to kind of brainstorm how to brand ourselves as we're looking for a name change that would allow us to grow in other parts of Denver and to kind of communicate who we were in a better way. And so we had a variation of a bunch of different names. And one of the things that kept coming up was the seniors would say, "I don't need any help. I don't need any help." And then after there would be a bit of resignation, they'd say, "Sometimes I need a little help." And it just kept coming up, so I just said, "Boy, well, what if we're just a little help?" And then, especially for the kind of bootstrap, greatest generation folks who were fiercely independent, I thought that would be a great way to kind of, lure them into, lure them towards the help that they really needed. And it was kind of catchy, and you can play around with it some and things like that. And so, in many ways, that's the kind of the story of how I got here and who we are. But it also defines what we do. We really do just do a little help. So we're filling gaps for folks, seniors with what I would say seniors with middle class expectations. And most of those folks really don't have middle class incomes anymore. They're working on a limited Social Security, and they've kind of outlived their retirement plan or their husband's retirement plan. And so we're able to supplement what they need and what they're getting from their family and from their neighbors and from other maybe agencies to help them thrive. And we do that through social events like picnics and other really neat social activities through we do some, I don't know, I guess you'd call them discussion groups that we call Tough Talks. And those Tough Talks are very informational, and they're based on the different calls or different questions that we get a fair amount, or based on some uncomfortable topics that folks don't want to talk about, like giving up the keys. And so we'll have a lot of adult children who are in their 60s and 70s who are struggling with their parents still driving, and a lot of what I would call older seniors in their 80s and 90s who are kind of faced with the challenge of whether or not they should continue driving. And so we've had a few of our Tough Talks that have been panel discussions that have focused on issues like that. We've had one that was called Sex Over 60. And so we had, that was...
Saucy.
It was saucy, yeah. So we had a sex therapist and some other kind of healthcare professionals and who talked about the subject. It was funny because it was our lowest attended event of all the Tough Talks, but we got the most hits for folks watching the video online afterwards, because people were uncomfortable showing up and no one wanted to be in the video and all that kind of stuff. So it was kind of funny in that way. And I've made the joke a few times to some of our seniors, you know, that you know, sex really has moved to the internet, because, you know, even for Sex Over 60 conversation, no one wanted to really be there in person. They wanted to be on the internet. And each time I've made that joke, everybody just rolls their eyes and does not think I'm very funny. So, but we do things like that. But a lot of our kind of core, what you'd call services or connecting opportunities, come with when folks need a ride to the doctor. They'll call us and they'll say, next Thursday I have a ride and I need to go to this particular medical center, to this clinic, and then we'll send out an email through our Help Connect database system. We'll send out that email to the group of volunteers that live in their particular neighborhood or somewhere in their particular neighborhood, and that volunteer will be able to say, oh, I'd be happy to give them a ride. And then those volunteers are background checked, and we have their car insurance information and all those things, and then we'll hand over, or we'll email the seniors' information to them, and then they'll make that connection and make the arrangements on their own. And so one of the beautiful parts of that, whether it's a doctor's appointment or a grocery store or beauty shop or any of those things, is that the volunteer really only has to say yes. They only have to say, you know, yes, I can take Sally on this particular day to this particular place, and then the relationship develops on its own, and we continue to kind of be stewards of that relationship.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that? You mentioned that earlier, is that they don't have to say no in email. So I think that's a really interesting concept, and I'm curious how you're crafting these communications where it's a yes only, and you don't have to feel bad about yourself if you pass on it.
Well, we have, you know, those emails are going out to 2,000 different volunteers. And so a particular senior who lives in, let's say, Lakewood, there's 200 other volunteers in Lakewood who are seeing that same email. And so some of the emails will be grouped, and it'll be kind of a scattershot where we'll send out 5 requests in 5 different neighborhoods to all of our 2,000 Metro Denver drivers. And some of these numbers are probably a little off. I don't know the exact numbers. But but it'll go to a lot of people. And by knowing that, it kind of takes the guilt trip or the shame of not being able to help an individual off the, you know, off the table, to where you realize that I'll get them next time kind of thing.
Yeah.
Rather than, and there's times that if it's a, that if it's a more difficult ride to fill or things like that, we'll have to send the email again, or we'll reach out to a particular volunteer who's helped that senior before. But that's kind of more rare than the rule is that the email system kind of works, and we provide enough detail that they can see how long that commitment would be. And most of them, I think, is about a 2-hour commitment. And then we have one of the other pieces that we have other than the email system is we've begun more and more to time slot volunteers, mm-hmm. to where a volunteer will say, I have my kids on Saturday, there's no soccer games, and I'd really like for them to participate in this. And so I'm going to say to a little help, next Saturday, I have a 10-to-2 window. Mm-hmm. If you have someone in my neighborhood that needs the help, please just send it to me. And so some of the folks that call in for requests just go straight to a volunteer that's in their neighborhood that's already expressed an interest in connecting.
So you're creating your own two-sided marketplace there.
That's right. That's right. Very much so, yes.
Yeah, great. So I wanted to get into a little bit of your background. You've mentioned quite a few interesting things. So number one is your background, and number two is this concept of creating a business where people help people. I think that part of the reason we've started the Business of Healthcare podcast is because we do think that there's an ability to keep the person at the center or the patient at the center while still running a viable business. So those two things. Is how are you doing that? What advice would you have for other people who think that you can either be social worky and kind and lovey, or you can make money in healthcare, and then the story of how Paul got here?
Well, I guess we're a supplement to healthcare in a sense, and I think we're pretty integral, mm-hmm. especially for our more isolated and less mobile, as far as not using a car, things like that for patients in the healthcare world. So our members are folks that need that gap filler, a little help. Mm-hmm. And I think that for us it's tough because we're a nonprofit, but each of us is making a living as a nonprofit professional. Mm-hmm. Each of us has, I don't know of a better job than my job, because in such a divided kind of political environment in our society, I get to see the best of all people. And so if someone's a kind of what you'd call a bleeding heart liberal or progressive, they are attracted to our model because they get this immediate connection and this beautiful kind of experience. If someone's a hardcore conservative with still, obviously both have good hearts and all that stuff, but if someone's a hardcore conservative, they get to see neighbors doing what they think neighbors should be doing, mm-hmm. for each other, and the type of society that they see envisioning as being the good society. And so I think that both, I get to see the best parts of these folks. And so both sides of the kind of aisle are our best donors, mm-hmm. our best volunteers, our best members, our best seniors, all those things. And so I think that there's money involved. We have to, in order for me to have a decent paying position, mm-hmm. as the executive director, and in order for us to have a program director and an operations and office manager and a volunteer coordinator and a growth director and all these kind of things, we have to have money, and it'd be unfair to not have high-level professionals in the jobs that we have. I think that in that, one of the ways that we're able to do it is not just through the donations, but these volunteers that I've mentioned, we're not covering their mileage. We're not covering their, any of their other expenses. They're covering that, and so that they can help folks and enable us to have a low overhead so that the money goes towards having well-paid professionals and having high-level care and having background checks and having all the things that we have. And I would say to someone that there's, especially in you know, if you look at the demographics of aging in our country, there's a lot of our partners are home healthcare, have their own home healthcare businesses, and they're making a decent living, and they're able to hire the right caring people to deliver the type of care and I would even say loving type of services to your aunts, uncles, grandparents. And you want these folks, you don't want the folks who are direct care providers in home, especially, or handyman or any of these other things, and women. You don't want these folks to be kind of doing it because they have no other options. Mm-hmm. You want folks who feel valued and who are paid fairly, who are paid well, and who are doing this because they can make a living improving the quality of life of a vulnerable population and an isolated population, and connecting and helping them have a window to the world that they wouldn't have if they didn't have compassionate, empathetic, loving people that were able to do that on a full-time basis.
Great. Let's get into the business model a little bit. So we're dancing around it. How are you paying for these employees, and how does a little help?
Okay, so 65-70% of our income comes from individual donors or smaller family foundations, things like that. and these are folks who are committed to our model, who see that, you know, on Colorado Gives Day last year, we did $130,000 or $40,000.
That's great.
And this year, we're hoping to be at $200,000. And it's a lot of small donations and a few good handfuls of large donations. We also have other partners and grant makers like the Anschutz Foundation, and we've had the Denver Foundation, Daniels Fund, and many different large Colorado-based and nationally-based grant makers who love our model and have invested in our success. And then we have about 8-10% comes from donations from our senior members and their families. So it's a pretty balanced, like most nonprofits, we depend on individual donors, and we have one big fundraising event each year, which is we call a Fiesta de Mayo, and it's kind of a silent auction, and there's music, and Greg Moss, formerly of Channel 9, has been the MC of that. These funders have been local churches like Mile High Church, and we've had Montview Presbyterian and other churches that have given us money to help their members and things. And we're always exploring new partnerships and things like that. So it's a very, it's a diversified revenue stream, and that's a struggle for a nonprofit, is to figure out how to diversify those things. But I think that our message and our mission is so simple that people can see the immediate value, and knowing that the overhead compared to many other business models and many other nonprofits is so direct. Like, we have to have an office, we have to have employees, and other than that, liability insurance and a few other supply kind of issues here or there. But almost all of it is going directly towards just providing programs and services to seniors who need our programs and services.
Who's your primary fundraiser? Is it yourself?
I am. That's my job. And then I would say also Hillary, our program director, is our grant writer. And so she's having a great grant writer is a huge benefit. And so that's what, you know, that's a huge part of both of our jobs. And truthfully, if everything you've just heard me say is basically our fundraising pitch. Like, it's not
okay.
it's not a super nuanced kind of thing. And so I'm very passionate about what we do, and all the people who work for us and who volunteer for us and who receive our services are passionate about it. And so it's been easy to grow our donor base, mm-hmm. because it's a lovely concept. It's a simple, lovely concept. And so, I mean, I've had experiences where, I'm in a band, and we talked about some of my background, and I'm in a band. I'm the front man, kind of lead singer, soul band. And not too long ago, one of our board members at our auction had bid on our band and a catering experience with our band to play in their backyard. And she and her husband, you know, did a great job of throwing this great party. Well, at the event, one of their friends, who's an anonymous donor of ours, said to my wife and I, this is great. I love the idea. And shortly after that, we got $10,000 nice. From that person, because we were just so enthusiastic about it, and the model speaks for itself. And so it's been a beautiful way to see we've continued to grow at about 25% each year.
Impressive.
And it's impressive, but it's also it shows the need. And it shows that if you can figure out a system of operations that delivers services that are meaningful and give a sense of purpose to the senior who's providing a valuable relationship that many of our volunteers are seeking, that's providing great stories and a sense of rootedness in a society or in a city that we live in a state that we live in that's so gentrified. There's so many new folks mm-hmm. here that when you meet someone, for instance, at a picnic, we have we were at a Park Hill picnic 3 years ago and at one of our volunteers' homes and in the backyard. And we were... There was about, 25 people at this picnic, and there were four or five tables set up. But because it was kind of an awkward number, we seemed to congregate around two of those round kind of banquet tables. And at the table I was with a few of my kids and one of our seniors, who's an African American woman, well into her 80s. She started telling a story about how she had been an Army nurse at Fitzsimmons. And this is in the 50s, and President Eisenhower was here visiting his in-laws, and he had a heart attack. And she was one of his primary caregivers. Pre-civil rights, talking about caring for the President of the United States. And, I'm there with my maybe 10-year-old kids, two daughters, and they were just mesmerized. And the woman telling the story was obviously empowered by this connection and this sense of, wow, my story is powerful. Mm-hmm. And so she really kept, really that provided, got the ball rolling. And she talked about meeting Dr. King twice, Dr. Martin Luther King twice.
Wow.
And then, told stories about him preaching at Montview Presbyterian, him sending a note back after one of his sermons that, he had locked himself in the pastor's study restroom, and so he had to climb out the window and walk around the church in order to get into the church. And that's why when they were waiting to see where he was, he had to do that. And so she's telling these stories. And a few months later, when winter came around and Black History Month came, my oldest daughter, our oldest daughter, asked, can I call Dolores? I'd love to ask her more of these stories. And so I think that you can see the beauty and the simplicity of this model, and the reciprocity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That it's not a one-way kind of thing where we provide services, but I don't see us as a service provider. Mm-hmm. I see us as a connection mechanism. These type of things happen. That's one of my favorite stories, mm-hmm. probably because King is a huge hero of mine. And my kids are involved.
Yeah.
But various, a multitude of our volunteers, a multitude of our seniors have similar stories mm-hmm. to tell.
Yeah, you can tell you've got a lot of passion.
Oh, I love it.
Can you tell me a little bit more about Service Saturdays?
Yes. So this is one, if this is being broadcast or podcast anytime soon, we're moving into our biggest Service Saturday time. And so we'll have one in Delta County in the North Fork Valley, one in Chaffee County in Salida and Buena Vista, one in Jefferson County in Lakewood, Arvada, Littleton, and then two in Denver, one in South Denver and one in more north east Denver. And what that is we have scouts who go out into to our seniors' homes. So our senior members will call us and say, "I'd like to have a Service Saturday team come to my house," and then we'll send a specialized scout into out to their home with a checklist of the things that they'd like done. So, for instance, washing windows, gutter cleaning, raking the leaves, taking the patio furniture back into the garage, taking the summer stuff, the boxes down to the basement, just the little help stuff that that needs to get done, and they don't have the strength maybe to do some of those things, and so then then we'll gather at a meeting spot in the morning at 8 a.m. We'll have coffee that's usually provided by a local coffee shop in Denver, Pablo's Coffee. I'll give them a shout out. They provide our coffee for free, and then I think it's City Donuts, and they'll provide. And Winchell's provides donuts for us, and the one that we do that where we meet at Mile High Church in Lakewood, they provide all those things. And so, a group of 100 to 300 volunteers will meet of all ages, and I mean all ages. We've had volunteers over 80 and under 3, think about that. That's the beauty of our model too. And we'll group them kind of into groups based on where they live for the most part, or sometimes it'll be work teams or church teams and things like that. And so we'll work them based on the relationships. And most of the time we'll have 6 or 7 folks going to one home and working for 2 to 3 hours on that list that the scout and the senior have developed together. The sense of, just having that one Saturday morning. I mean, we have some that go to, we've had a few volunteers that have been to 3 of our Service Saturdays in one season. But we do this twice a year. We do all, 5, 6 of these twice a year. It's really one of the things I'll say when I'm giving my rah-rah speech to the large group of folks is the most important thing you're going to do today is not wash a window, and it's not going to be raking leaves. And while those things are important, the connection and the conversation that you're going to have, especially listening, is just a beautiful thing. Because for some of our folks, this is a rare occasion to have this type of attention showered upon them. And so it really helps to play into our goal of connection. And one of the things I think that we, independent is such a highly valued quality or attribute or whatever it's something all of us are shooting for is independence. And I don't think it's realistic, and I don't know that it's actually an admirable goal. We really are trying to create interdependence, and interdependence, I think, really fights isolation and really improves a sense of self and meaning and community. And so these Service Saturdays are just this beautiful little kind of utopian experiment for 3 hours in somebody's yard, in the senior's yard, that shows them that their neighbors care about them. And the good part about that is it's not a one-off. You know, that you might have this service Saturday crew, but then that Tuesday when you're going to the doctor, that same senior, she's got a ride from one of her neighbors. And one of the things that I think makes us unique from, let's say, Lyft or a taxi or even some of the other types of senior transportation is it's door through door. And so we'll many times, the volunteer will get there, will be welcomed into the home, will help the senior with their on with their coat, and then, you know, give them their arm to get down to the to their car. And then, you know, when they get to the grocery store, they're both walking through with that grocery list. And then when they get home, they're putting the groceries in the cupboard together and all those things. So the experience continues to kind of help that thriving connection that we really strive for.
Great. Yeah, I'm in. What if you don't live in the neighborhood? Like, I don't think we have this in my neighborhood. I live in Stapleton in Denver, but maybe me and my kids wanted to go to Wash Park or one of your neighborhoods. Is that?
You're more than welcome to do that, and so you're going to get the type of emails that go out to everyone, and so okay. You'll just say, "I'd like to be a driver. Put me on the list," okay. And we'll put. And some folks only want to be in their neighborhood or their small town, and that's the list that they get. But you'd be able to get on the list, and you would just start getting emails that would say, you would call us. You'd go through a short volunteer training. We would do the background check for you and then get the driver's information, and then you'd be on the list, ready to go. And service Saturdays aren't even that. Service Saturdays aren't background check and all those things because you're not having access to a senior by yourself. That's more of an event. And that's usually the best kind of dip your toe in your water experience for us to gain more committed volunteers. And I have to say that as we grow, we really, really need drivers. And I would say also that if you're, I know a lot of the listeners are thinking about exploring a career in healthcare or a career in helping with the aging population. And volunteering for a little help would be a great way to see if it's for you. Because you may know that you had a wonderful relationship with your grandma, but not everybody's as sweet as your grandma. So to experience, our folks have high expectations and want us to meet them. And so... You'll get to experience kind of what I would say is a wide menu of needs and things like that. And so I think that this would be a good kind of dip the toes in the water experience. And truthfully, our another piece of what we do is navigation, because no one's ever grown old before. You know, all of us. As we're aging, we're experiencing it for ourselves the first time. And so the needs and things when you're not climbing a ladder anymore, when you're not driving or those things, we're helping not just to connect folks to volunteers, but we also have what we call the preferred provider list of folks who have been vetted by our seniors and our volunteers who we rely on to provide the more than a little help piece. Mm-hmm. And so some of that in-home care, meal preparation, we generally give one ride a week to our members. And so a lot of them need to go somewhere more than once a week. And so by having someone who's developed, let's say, an elder Uber, that's a great way to make money, right? Mm-hmm. And it's also a great service to us, especially if they'll go through our training and allow to kind of be vetted by us. And so I think there's a multitude of ways to serve a population and make a living doing it.
Great. Yeah, that's right where we're at. I've got a couple personal questions here for you. I see pictures of your family here in your office.
Yes.
And you've mentioned several things that you do. Maybe just give us an idea of how you're balancing all of these various life choices you've made, and what are those life choices?
So I serve a church, Mayflower Congregational Church in Englewood. It's the oldest church in Englewood. And one of the ways I kind of describe it is that, you know, we had a female pastor in 1914. And so it's a pretty progressive church. And I've been there for 16 years now. They've allowed me, you know, to kind of spread my wings. And so that's become a part-time job for me. But I preach most every Sunday, and I have a great staff there. And I think that's the key to flexibility and the key to doing things is to have people who are better than you are at organization and some other things. And I have that here at a little help to this a staff that really allows me to do the parts of the job that I can do really well, and they do the parts of the job that they can do really well. And so we share that, and we trust each other, and we're accountable in that way. I'm also, like I said, in a band, and that takes a little bit of time here or there. With my family, all of us here that work at a little help have a flexibility. You know, we know what jobs we have to get done. We have a lot on our plates, but that balances with real life and family obligations and the fun parts of having a family. I was late to the podcast this morning because I do kid drop-off. And so kid drop-off took a little bit more time this morning than normal. And so I kind of have the morning shift, and my wife, who teaches at Cherry Creek High School, she does the afternoons. And then I would say we share the duties in the evening, but if she heard this, she might hurt me.
She might say that she does the dishes more often.
She does the dishes a lot more often. And so we kind of share in those things, and there's times when I'm, you know, at night when I'm watching the Nuggets or the Rockies or whatever, where I'm still answering emails and writing a sermon and kind of working on some strategy parts or figuring out what's going to happen the next day. And you know, I think that the folks on my staff at A Little Help would agree that I may be sending some kind of short and very curt, maybe, emails at night that they would think, what is this guy doing up right now? But the only part about, so I play on two soccer teams, two men over 30 soccer teams, and that's usually the only real source of stress for when I'm leaving for a soccer game at 9 at night. The looks and the comments I get from my wife, that's the only time that I think that I may be pushing it a little too far.
I could see that. All right, so just to wrap things up, Paul, how can somebody get involved, make a donation, stay connected? What's the best way to get engaged outside of signing up for a service Saturdays as soon as you're done listening to this?
alittlehelp.org. You can press the donate now. Please remember us on Colorado Gives Day. That is the number one source of funding that we have each year. I think Service Saturday and going and watching, we have some very well done videos on our website that can give you a 4-minute view of the A Little Help experience. I think that it really is community the way we all hope it can be. And so the idea of getting involved at the level you can get involved at, that's our model. And so dip your toes in the water with the Service Saturday, and then think about, you know, there's probably some ways that you're spending time that may not be as fruitful as giving a senior a ride. And if you, you know, mark off every other Sunday morning that you're willing to give a senior a ride to, we have one woman that goes to Perkins every Sunday, and a volunteer takes her, and the senior insists on paying for her and that volunteer's meal. If you, I'll tug at your heartstrings a bit, That's where she went. She was married for 75 years, actually 77 years, and her husband died a few months ago, and they would go to that Perkins twice a month. And now it's important to her to continue that experience, and our volunteers allow her to do that. And you could volunteer to do something that meaningful, and it's probably better than the way you're spending your time some of those times. You could also, the beauty of A Little Help, you could volunteer with her and your children, and that would enhance the experience for her and you and your children. So it's a very simple model, and there's not much more in the world that I would like to see grow than this type of intergenerational, reciprocal, beautiful community.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Paul. I can't wait to watch the success.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed today's discussion with Paul Ramsey as much as I did. If you have any feedback for us or further discussion or maybe even an idea of who we should have on the podcast, please contact either myself, Jesse, or Lucas Howell at thejoyofhealthcare.com. Of course, we'd like for you to rate us on iTunes, but even more than that, we'd like you to tell your friends and give us any feedback that you might have so we can make this podcast better and better.